so young people can not make the mistakes that we made when we were your age. All right, so that's what's coming up. I think it'll be practical stuff. But in the meantime, we're finishing up the book of Genesis. Who's the main character in the book of Genesis? Other than God, of course.
Abraham.
So basically, the story of the Bible is the story of Genesis. Genesis is introduction to the Bible story. So, as we said last week in a very quick review, Genesis 1, God created everything and it was very good. Genesis 2, God created us to have a relationship with Him because He wanted us to know Him. He wanted to know us. He wanted us to love one another. Genesis 3 through 11, we messed up super, super badly. God gave us free will. We chose to rebel. We chose to say what God had for us was not enough. We had the fall. And then if it weren't for the righteousness of Noah, it all would have been wiped out. But then really the story of salvation begins with Abraham. God chose a man of faith. So we have Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. All right, and that's the story of the succession that's going to lead to the Messiah. Now we have the story of Joseph. One of the themes of this class has been how these events are prefigures or foreshadows of things that we learn in the New Testament. And that is certainly going to be true with Joseph, who is one of my favorite prefigures of the Messiah. Every prefigure of the Messiah saves Israel. All right. Every prefigure of the Messiah is either a priest or a prophet or a king. But in the case of Joseph, he is a king, or actually, generally, it could be a prince, like at the right hand of the Father. That's what the Messiah is. He is a prophet, a dreamer, and a visionary. And there's a sense in which Joseph acts like a priest because he intercedes with Pharaoh to save God's people from, to save Israel. So look at the big picture. Joseph starts at the right hand of his father. Joseph was the son of Jacob. Well, thank you for knowing that. The son of actually, isn't it Rebecca? What? Whichever it was. I get, yeah. The son of, right. So the chosen wife of Jacob had two children, Joseph and
Benjamin.
So Jacob was the favored son of his father. And what happened to Jacob? Jacob became a slave. Where? In Egypt. Jesus, who was at the right hand of his father, he came down to live around a bunch of slaves. He became like a slave so that he could save the slaves. That's the story of Jacob. I'm sorry, it's the story of Joseph, but it's also the story of Moses. Because both Joseph and Moses are prefigures of the Messiah. So Joseph was at the right hand of his father. What happens? He becomes a slave in Egypt. And because he became a slave in Egypt, he was ultimately able to save God's people. Not only, and we'll see, not only did he save God's people, he also gave bread to the Gentiles. But anyway, God took him from being a slave to become at the right hand of the king. He started at the right hand of his father, he became a slave in Egypt, and then he was raised up to the right hand of the king, becoming a prince of Egypt, right? That's that he was the prince of Egypt. So that's the story of Jesus. All right? So in a sense, his story is the story of us because we started in the garden, we ended up in Egypt, metaphorically, and God is bringing us back into the garden. Reminds me of Hosea 11:1. Out of Egypt, I called my son. And it's so cool, the story about what happened even to Joseph's bones. Joseph's bones were returned to the promised land after 440 years. So even Joseph was taken out of Egypt. Genesis 50, verse 24 and 25. All right, and that's even mentioned in Hebrews 11:22. So he was the favorite son of his father. He was a shepherd. Can you think of another really good shepherd? I can. God said to him in a dream, you're going to rule over your brothers as king. Again, that's Jesus. All right, he had two dreams, actually, in which he learned he was going to rule over his brothers as a king. All right, and then out of jealousy, his brothers conceived of a plan to kill him. Can you think of another son at the right hand of his father who came, and then he was going to be king of the Jews, and because of that, his Jewish brothers decided to kill him? Can you think of somebody else that's a story about? I think you know who I'm talking about. But rather than being killed, which he is sort of prefiguring, instead, what did they do? They sold him as a slave into Egypt. They betrayed him for 20 pieces of silver. And the price, the approximate price of a slave at that time was 20 pieces of silver. Can you think of another right-hand son who also was betrayed by his brothers, who was sold and betrayed for the price of a slave? Guess what the price of a slave was in Roman times, roughly? 30 pieces of silver. The parallels are unmistakable. So God brought him down to Egypt to protect him from his jealous brothers. Can you think of another young baby who was brought down into Egypt to protect him from his jealous brothers? He was raised by God to become a king from a very humble situation. And of course, in order to be a prefigure of the Messiah, you have to save Israel. So did Joseph save Israel? He literally saved Israel. Because what was his father's given name? Israel. All right? In fact, not only did Joseph save Israel, but through his work, many Gentile nations were also saved from the famine. Again, we see a picture of Jesus. And by the way, Jacob almost literally received his son back from the dead. Genesis 45:28, as we'll see. All right? So those are some of the ways in which Jacob is a prefigure of the Messiah. All those parallels. If you think that's an accident, you're wrong. And the person who wrote the book of Genesis had no idea when they wrote the story of Joseph that they were pre-telling the story of the Son of God. Pretty cool stuff. Now, I wish I could get into Genesis 38, Jacob and Tamar. And it's just funny because Genesis 27 is introduction to Joseph. And then this, what's this Genesis 30 about? Judah and Tamar. Now, Judah, like Jacob, Judah started out, man, not so good. Remember how Jacob started out really bad, but in the end he became a great man of faith and a great man of God? Well, the story of Judah is the same because Judah, in order to have children, he basically has sex with a prostitute. And the prostitute gives birth to two children, Perez and Zerah. Of those two, Perez and Zerah, who is an important figure in the entire story of the Bible? Of the 12 sons, why is Judah so important?
Betrayed Jesus?
Nope. No, that's Judas. Yes. Right. That's the tribe through whom the Messiah will come. And in Genesis 50, I hope I have time for this tonight, we're going to see the prophecy about Judah being the lion of the tribe of Israel. So Judah has to be such a righteous guy that he's the son who's chosen to be the ancestor of the Messiah. Not a very good start. But anyway, Perez, if you look at the different genealogies, you'll see that Perez is the father of, ancestor of Boaz, and Boaz marries Ruth, and they have a son, and he has a son, and his son is David, and etc. So really, this little weird thing in Genesis 38, it's there because it's telling the story of the ancestry of Jesus. But the thing is, when it was written, the authors had no idea why it needed to be there. The Bible is inspired by God. So let's go back and let's do the story of Jacob. Joseph. I'm going to keep saying that. Feel free to correct me every single time. So in Genesis 37, God's plan to fulfill the promise that he'd given to Abraham starts to pick up steam. The story of Joseph is the segue between Genesis and Exodus. So the story of Joseph ends Genesis. And when you finish the story of Joseph, you're like perfectly ready to begin the story of Exodus, even though there's a 400-year gap. Genesis 37, verse 3. All right. I'm excited about Joseph. It's awesome, awesome, amazing story. Genesis 37, verse 3. All right. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons. And again, he is the chosen son. He is the special son. In that sense, he's the prefigure of the Messiah. Because he had been born to him in his old age, and also because he was the son of Rebekah, the wife that he loved. Rachel, thank you. Rachel, okay, good. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they loved him and they said, oh, we're so glad that Joseph, that you're going to be the favorite son, right? No, because he's the second youngest son. So they're totally jealous. Joseph had a dream. And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, listen to this dream that I had. We're binding sheaves of grain out of the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood straight while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it. Now, if you were Joseph, would you want to tell your brothers this dream? Well, maybe. If you're prideful. Now, Joseph, I'm telling you, during the later part of his life, Joseph is an incredible, amazing example of righteousness and holiness and faith. Right here, I don't know. He's like, nanny. All right, but, you know, that's the reason for this is because he was the chosen son. So that's a picture of the tribes of Judah, the tribes of Israel, rather, bowing down to Jesus. That's the dream that he had. His brother said to him, do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us, you little pipsqueak? You little teenager who's, 17 years old? All right? And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he said. Then he had another dream, and this dream is even more outrageous. Oh, my goodness gracious. Oh, that's Potiphar. All right? Well, listen, he said, I had another dream, and this time the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. So who's bowing down to him now besides his 11 brothers? His mother and his father are bowing down to him. All right. How do you think his brothers are going to take this? And how do you think his father is going to take this? All right. When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and he said, what is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you? Answer?
Yeah.
Exactly. And by the way, symbolically, as a prefigure, because Joseph is a prefigure of the Messiah, the answer is, yeah, absolutely they will. You bet they will. Jesus, the apostles, and his mother. I don't know about his father bowing down to him. I'm not sure that happened. Now, his brothers had gone to graze their father's flock near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, as you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I'm going to send you to them. Very well, he replied. So he said to him, go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks. Bring word back to me. Then he sent him off to the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and asked him, what are you looking for? He replied, I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they're grazing their flocks? They moved on from here. The man answered, I heard them say, let's go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them there at Dothan. I think you know the story, so let me just pretty much tell the story. So as the sons were so jealous, they decided to kill Joseph. Ironically, and showing God's providence and his predestination, He ultimately was sent down into slavery in Egypt. And because he was sent into slavery in Egypt, what happened? Israel and all of his children were saved from death. The providence of God in having Joseph sent into abject slavery and even prison in Egypt, it turned out to save God's people. And God's promise to Abram was fulfilled through this dastardly deed that his brothers did to him. Now, my favorite scripture in the book of in the story of Genesis, Joseph for sure, we're going to get to that. I'm not going to tell you. But Joseph figures it out. So his brothers are jealous, but let's read 37:11. All right. His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept this matter in mind. So the sons plot to kill Joseph, but in verse 21 and 22, Reuben, the black sheep son, redeems himself by demanding that they not do this. So Reuben, they're going to kill, they say, let's kill him. Yeah, we're bowing down to him in his dream. We're bowing down to the stars and the wheat and all that kind of stuff. Let's kill him. But Reuben says, no, we can't do that. And because of that, Reuben later on will be honored as one of the chief sons of Israel. So what happens is Leah's son, other than Reuben, they're the ones who plot to kill Joseph. Why would Leah's sons do that? Yeah, because of jealousy, right? This whole thing about, yeah, oh my goodness. So anyway, so rather than kill him, they throw him into a pit. And then they find some people and they sell him as a slave for 20 pieces of silver. And the sources that I read tell me that a male slave between 5 and 20 years old, according to Leviticus 27, verse 5, according to Leviticus 27, verse 5, the price of a male slave under 20 years old was 20 pieces of silver. So they sold him essentially as a slave. Then we have Genesis 39. All right. Oh, there's that robe. You know that robe of many colors? You know that thing that he gave him? All right. Well, oh, okay. Sort of. The Hebrew is more like a robe with long sleeves. It's more likely what it actually means. You know, but, you know, I don't know if I really need to spoil the story about the robe of many colors and what Dolly Parton's song and all that kind of stuff. Either way, Joseph's father unwisely shows favoritism towards one son. So parents, do parents have a favorite child?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, they tend to. Parents, be really careful. All right, I always tell my middle daughter that she's my favorite child. I tell her that all the time. Jan will tell you that. All right, but I do that on purpose. I do that on purpose, all right? Because the other two think that they're my favorite kids, so I do that on purpose just to kind of balance it out. All right, Genesis 39. Let's start there in Genesis 39. Joseph, again, up till the time he was sent into slavery in Egypt, Joseph was a somewhat questionable character. But God disciplines Joseph. God uses the very, very difficult situation he's put into to train him, to raise him up to be a great man of God. Verse 1 of Genesis 39. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. Now, everywhere that God sent Joseph, even though it was a tragic situation, being ripped from his family, being sold as a slave in Egypt, all of which setting up this prefiguring situation in Messiah, the bottom line is, no matter where Joseph ended up, God blessed him anyway, right? So he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes. He became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household. He entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and all of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household. Everything that Joseph touched in his whole life prospered amazingly. Again, because he's a sort of a foreshadow, a prefigure of the Messiah. Because of Joseph, the blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in his house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was a well-built and handsome man. All right, kind of like Ryan, you know, well-built and good-looking. Kind of like Ryan. Okay. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, she's constantly, "Come on, let's have sex. Let's have some fun. Come on, my husband's away. You know, you're lonely. You're having lots of hormones. I'm a young, beautiful woman. My husband's too old. You know, come on, let's just... You know, hey, it's not a big deal. You know, that's just natural stuff. That's what young people do, all this kind of stuff." All right? The thing is, Joseph couldn't stop her from doing this then. There's nothing he could really do about it. One day, he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand, and he ran out of the house. So Joseph's righteous behavior is going to lead him to be blessed greatly, right? Not yet. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servant and said, "Look," she said to him, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me. But I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and he ran out of the house." She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. You know what happened. All right. He was thrown into prison. All right. But you know what? We all know how Joseph's righteousness got him sent to prison. And we're inspired and encouraged by Joseph, who did not have what we have. I mean, consider Joseph's faith. Did Joseph have a Bible? Did Joseph have a church to support him? Did he have some really awesome fellowship on Sunday morning? What did Joseph have? All he had was his faith in God. All right? That's all he had. You know, if Joseph had not been thrown into prison, just like if he'd not been thrown into a pit and sold into slavery, he would have never met Pharaoh. He would have never been his cupbearer. He would have never been elevated to Pharaoh's service. And Israel would not have been saved. The nations would have not have been blessed. And ultimately, God's plan would not have happened. And ultimately, the Messiah never would have come. So we have to understand, if God puts us in a bad place or allows us to be in a bad place, you understand, all things work out to the good for those who love him and are called to his service. So Joseph is now, he's gone from the right hand of his father to slavery in Egypt, and now he's in prison. God hates him. God is not taking care of him. What's his faith earned him? Nothing. So just like Job, he's probably going to curse God, right? No. Sitting in the pit in a prison, no Bible, no church, no spiritual friends, No prophecies fulfilled. In fact, he's creating prophecies. Joseph relies on God. Genesis 39, verse 21. While Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness. He granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison. He was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. What must Joseph's character have been for Potiphar to have trusted everything to him and this head prison guy to trust everything with Joseph? He must have had incredible integrity. What else?
Character.
Yes. What else?
Humility.
Humility. Hmm? Loyalty. Yeah. How's your character measure up against Joseph? I mean, no matter where he was, he didn't complain, he didn't argue, he accepted his situation with humility, he served his prisoners, he served his slave master. Joseph was amazing. But, so Joseph eventually came to rule over the prison. And then the cupbearer has a dream, and then the baker has a dream, right? And these guys were people that had served Pharaoh, and just by coincidence, these two that had served next to Pharaoh end up kind of in the cell next to Joseph, and they both had dreams. And they heard that Joseph can interpret dreams, so they said, Joseph, help us out, interpret our dream. So he says to the cupbearer, in 3 days you'll be restored to Pharaoh. And then he says to the baker, in 3 days you'll be hanged. All right? And the whole 3 days being restored to Pharaoh, oh, the symbolism of being restored to Pharaoh in 3 days. Jesus was raised from the dead on the third day. Abraham received his son back from the dead. When? On the third day. Jonah was raised from the dead and brought out of the fish on the third day. And also Esther, all right, decided to sacrifice her life by speaking to the king, and God saved her from death on the third day. So as Daniel did before him, Joseph, let's read it, chapter 40, verse 8. I'll start with verse 6. When Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw that they were dejected. So he asked Pharaoh's officials who were in custody with him in his master's house, "Why do you look so sad today? We both had dreams," they answered, "but there is no one to interpret them." Then Joseph said to them, "I'm awesome. I'm a great prophet, and I can do great stuff for you. I've led Bible study groups. I've been a church leader. Just come to me, and I will really make everything go great for you." No. Nope. He says, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dream." So the chief cupbearer told Joseph his dream. He said to him, "In my dream, I saw a vine in front of me, and on the vine were three branches. As I stood, as soon as it budded, it blossomed, its clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and put the cup in his hand." That seems like not that hard to interpret. I don't know why I needed Joseph for that one. Anyway. But then Joseph says to the cupbearer, "Hey, when you're restored to Pharaoh, just remember me." And the cupbearer, being so loyal, what did he do?
He forgot.
Nothing. So Joseph languishes in prison for several more years. But you know what? By the time we get to Genesis 41, Joseph has been tried and found true. You know, like we see in Deuteronomy 8, God tested you to see what's in your heart, to teach you that man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes out of the mouth of the Lord. So Joseph has been trained to rely not on himself, but on God in every situation. So Joseph is now a mature man of faith. God can now, Philippians 2, 4 through 9, consider him who did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but instead became like a man, humbled himself to the point of death, even death on the cross. So what did God do? God raised him up to his right hand. Thank you, Jan. Joseph in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph, and he was loyal to him. There's that word, hesed. God was always loyal to Joseph. And therefore, Joseph was always loyal to God. We see Joseph as a prophet. He says, remember me. And then Pharaoh has two dreams. How many dreams did Joseph have? Two dreams. And then there was the dream of the cupbearer and the dream of the baker. And then Pharaoh has two dreams. All right? All right. So, let's see here. Genesis 41, right? All right. Pharaoh has dreams. Verse 41, verse 1. When two full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile. When out of the river there came up seven cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, seven other cows, ugly and gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the riverbank, and the cows were ugly and gaunt. They ate up the seven sleek, fat cows. Then Pharaoh woke up. What a weird dream. He fell asleep again, and he had a second dream. Seven heads of grain, healthy and good, were growing on a single stalk. After them, seven other heads of grain sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain were swallowed up by the seven healthy, full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been a dream. In the morning, his mind was troubled, so he sent for all the magicians and wise men of Egypt. Whose story does this sound pretty similar to? Daniel, the story of Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar had a dream of this statue, the head of gold, the chest of silver, the belly and thigh of bronze, and the legs of iron. And he called, and he needs an interpretation. And of course, Daniel interprets the dream. All right? So 41, let's go down to, let's see. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, today I'm reminded, you know, I kind of forgot. There's this guy that, like, saved my life, and, you know, and he got me out of prison, and he sent me back here, and, you know, I kind of, like, promised him I'd tell you about him, and, you know, now that you mention it, you know, I think I do know somebody can interpret dreams, and it's going to really help me out here to, you know, he's kind of, it's all about him. It's not about Joseph. It's kind of bogus. All right, let me see. Pharaoh was once angry with his servants, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night, et cetera, et cetera. And so he said, basically, he restored me. I was restored to my position, and the other man was impaled. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream, and no one can interpret it, but I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. And Joseph says, you're right. I'm so awesome. I'm an amazing interpreter. You know what? I've got the Holy Ghost in me, and I can do great miracles, and, you know, I'm the prophet around here. Let me prophesy for you, you know, awesome stuff that's going to go on. Okay. Like Daniel. Look at Daniel in Daniel chapter 2. And then later on in Daniel chapter 4. All right. He never took credit to himself. He always gave credit to God. All right. So verse 16, I cannot do it, Joseph replied to Pharaoh, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. And Pharaoh said to Joseph in my dream, he tells him his dream. Verse 25, then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years. The seven good heads of grain are also 7 years. It is one and the same dream. The seven lean, ugly cows that came up afterward are 7 years. And you know the story. So he basically says, here's the advice I need to give you. For the next 7 years, take a massive tax of all the land, because they're going to be years with bumper harvests, and store up massive, unheard of quantities of grain and everything else. Because after that's going to come 7 years of extreme drought, when there's going to be virtually no crops at all. And he says, I'm telling you this, God is going to bring seven good years and seven lean years. And so, of course, exactly what he prophesied happens. All right? Verse 53 of Genesis 41. The 7 years of abundance in Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began, just as Joseph had said. There was famine in all the other lands, not just in Egypt, but in all the lands of the eastern Mediterranean, including, obviously, Canaan, Palestine. All right? There was famine in all the other lands, but in the whole land of Egypt, there was food. When all Egypt began to feel the famine, the people cried to Pharaoh for food. Then Pharaoh told all the Egyptians, go to Joseph. At this point, Joseph is the vizier of Egypt. He's like the prime minister of Egypt. All right, again, the right-hand son of his father, the favored son, but he became a slave in Egypt. He lost everything because in order to save the slaves, you need to become like the slaves. It's the story of Jesus. But God miraculously raised him up to be the adopted son, essentially, the vizier, the right-hand man in all of Egypt. What an amazing thing that twice Egyptian, very, very humble, very, very humble Jews, rather, ended up being second to the king of Egypt. That would be both Joseph and Moses. Anyway, verse 56, when famine had spread over the whole country, Joseph opened all the storehouses, sold grain to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe throughout Egypt, and all the world came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph, because the famine was severe everywhere. Again, this is the Messiah. Joseph is providing bread, not just to the Jews. Joseph is providing bread to all the nations. Because Jesus is the Savior, not just of the Jews, not just the Egyptians, but of all nations. All right, now, chapter 42 through 47, there's a lot there, and it's going to be hard to cover it all. We're going to have to do a lot of skipping. So in Genesis 42, there's famine all over, but especially in Canaan. So what happens is Jacob sends 10 of his sons. All right, the one he leaves behind is who?
Benjamin,
because he has two favorite sons. His first favorite son is Joseph. And what happened to Joseph, as far as Jacob knows?
Dead.
All right. Killed. He's dead. So he's there. There's no way I can let Benjamin go. So he sends 10 sons down to Egypt, right? So they come before Pharaoh. They come before Joseph, and remember that dream? Remember that dream of the 11 sons bowing down to the sons, to the 12? And so the sons, and they're bowing down, saying, oh, Vizier of Egypt, save us, give us bread. And of course, Joseph, being a bit of a sly dog there, he doesn't tell them who he is. Because I think Joseph is aware of kind of the whole situation that's going on. I don't really know that. So he prepares a plan to both save them, but also to humble them at the same time. Ultimately, getting them to repent of their terrible behavior towards him, but also so they can see the providence of God and the fulfillment of the second dream. All right, having only 10 sons, they did not allow them to fulfill the dream. So because ultimately, all 11 sons need to bow down to him. So far, it's only 10. So Joseph's like, okay, my dream was 11 sons bowing down to me. There's only 10 here. All right, there must be another stage here. Right? All right. Now, Genesis 42, let's read 21 and 22. Genesis 42, 21 and 22. How much of this is Joseph's wisdom and how much of it is God's providence? It's hard to say. Genesis 42, verse 21 and 22. Here we go. They said to another, surely we are being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we did not listen. That is why this distress comes on us. So what happens is, let me see. Yeah, verse 10. No, my Lord, they answered, your servants have come to buy food. We are all the sons of one man. Your servants are honest, not spies. No, he said to them, you've come to see where our land is unprotected. They replied, no, your servants were 12 brothers, the sons of one man who lives in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with our father and one is no more. Joseph said to them, it is just as I told you, you're spies. And this is how you will be tested. As surely as Pharaoh lives, you will not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of your number to get your brother. The rest of you will be kept in prison so that your words may be tested to see if you are telling the truth. If you're not, then as surely as Pharaoh lives, you're spies. Put them all in custody for 3 days. On the third day, Joseph said to them, do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you're honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison while the rest of you go and take grain back for your starving households. But you must bring your youngest brother to me so that your words may be verified, that you may not die. This they proceeded to do. They said to one another, surely we are being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. That is why this distress has come on us. Reuben replied, didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? Remember, he's the one who said to not kill him. But you wouldn't listen. Now we must give an accounting for his blood. They did not realize that Joseph could understand them since he was using an interpreter. So, okay, my cell phone just died if somebody wants to put it on Zoom. I don't know if anybody was there. Turned away from them, he began to weep. They came back and spoke to them again. He had Simeon taken from them and bound before their eyes. So anyway, he fills their bags with grain and he goes back. All right, they go back to Egypt, right?
Katie's online.
Ah, Katie's online. Oh, so, oh, you put yours up there. Great.
No, it was just low power.
Oh, low power. Okay, good. So he sends them home, keeping Simeon with him, the second oldest son, not Reuben, the oldest, because he now realizes that Reuben is not guilty of the sin against him. So he demands them to send Benjamin. Oops. Why is it doing that? Aha. Somebody else is on there? All right. Are we good? Awesome. All right. Yeah, we could charge it. There you go. Excellent. So anyway, Joseph's wondering if they've really repented. So they go back and they come back for more food, but this time they convince their father to send Benjamin. Right? And so they come and then Joseph gives them grain and he sends them home, but he puts a cup, a golden cup in Benjamin's sack, right? So, Genesis 44, verse 1 and 2. Let's read that, Genesis 44. All right. We're getting to the climax of this awesome story. Genesis 44, verse 1 and 2. Joseph gave these instructions to the steward of the house. Fill the men's sack with as much food as they can carry. Put each man's silver in the mouth of his sack. That's the silver that they were supposed to give him to pay for the grain. All right. And then put each man's silver in the mouth of his sack. Then put my cup, the silver one, in the mouth of the youngest one's sack, along with the silver for his grain. And they did as Joseph said. So they're going back and then they're on the way back and they check on the bags. OMG. The silver's in the sack. And then there's the cup. All right. So. The bottom line is Judah intervenes. Let's go to Genesis 43, verse 8 and 9. Genesis 43. Because bottom line is we got to find out why Judah. It's a mystery. Remember Judah, the one who had sex with Tamar? And because of that, you know, basically the descendants of Jesus are the children of a prostitute, adultery thing, which is kind of interesting. Genesis 43, verses 8 and 9. We're going to find out why specifically Judah. Genesis 43, verses 8 and 9. Here we go. Then Judah said to Israel, his father, send the boy along with me, and we will go at once so that we and you and our children may live and not die. I myself will guarantee his safety. You can hold me personally responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him here before you, I will bear the blame before you all my life. As it is, If we had not delayed, we could have gone and returned twice. So basically, Judah offers his life as a ransom to save Benjamin. Then if we go forward to Genesis 44, verses 32-34, okay, here Judah again steps in and essentially offers his life as a ransom. Okay, I'll start in verse 30. So now if the boy is not with us, when I go back to your servant, my father, and if my father, whose life is closely bound up with the boy's life, sees that the boy isn't there, he will die. Your servants will bring the gray head of our father down to the grave in sorrow. Your servant guaranteed the boy's safety to my father. I said, if I do not bring him back to you, I will bear the blame before you, my father, all my life. Now then, please let your servant remain here as my Lord's slave in place of the boy. So he offers his life as a ransom to save Benjamin. How can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? No, do not let me see the misery that would come to my father. So anyway, so twice Judah offered his life as a ransom. All right, and that's why ultimately I believe he was chosen to be the father of the Messiah. All right, so 22 years earlier, Judah had engineered the selling of Joseph into slavery. And here he is offering his life to save the second son of Rachel. So Joseph understands that if no one else has, Judah has truly repented and changed. So Joseph's heart finally changes. All right, you know what? I think it's time to forgive my brothers, right? So here we go. Genesis 45. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants, and he cried out, "Have everyone leave my presence." So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. He wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" Can you imagine what his brothers went through? "I am Joseph, the one that we almost killed, that we sold into slavery 22 years ago, and everything that's happened to us, all this disaster, is all because of what we did to Joseph." And then Joseph is alive. He says, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come close to me." When they had done so, he said, "I'm your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now, do not be distressed. Do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you." It was to save lives. That's why Jesus went down into Egypt. That's why Jesus left the right hand of his father to live amongst the slaves in order to save the slaves. All right, let's see. For 2 years now, there has been famine in the land. For the next 5 years, there will be no plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. And again, we see Joseph as a prefigure of the Messiah. Do not be distressed. Do not be angry. Right? With yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. All right. In fact, I even like chapter 50, verse 20 even better. Chapter 50, verse 20. All right, starting at verse 19. But Joseph said to them, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." All right? Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." So then, "Don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children." And he assured them, and he spoke kindly to them. So anyway, the rest of the story. I want to read 45 verse 8 also. 45 verse 8, that's a cool one. "So then it was not you who sent me here." "So then it was not you, you 11 jealous brothers, who are now bowing down to me in great fear. It was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household, and ruler of all Egypt. Now hurry back to my father and say to him, this is what your son Joseph says. God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Don't delay. You shall live in the region of Goshen and be near me. So does the story of Joseph teach us that God's grace eliminates the consequences of our sins? No, definitely not. But it does teach us God's grace, God's sacrificial, basically taking the place, taking the account for our own sin. The story is that God works to bring us salvation in spite of the fact that he uses imperfect humans to achieve his ends. But Jacob and his children did not completely escape the consequences of their sinful actions. That God used their actions against Joseph to save them does not mean that God doesn't condemn their sin. In fact, they suffered many consequences in this life for their sin. All right, anyway, Jacob in chapter 46, Jacob and his family and his possession enter Egypt. In chapter 46, verse 3, here we go. And God spoke to Israel in a vision at night and said, Jacob, Jacob, here I am, he replied. Says, I am God, the God of your father. He said, do not be afraid to go down into Egypt, for I'll make you into a great nation there. I will go down to Egypt with you, and I will surely bring you back again. And Joseph's own hands will close your eyes, which is actually what happened. So now Joseph's sort of resurrection allows Jacob to die in peace, just as the resurrection of the new Joseph, that's Jesus, has allowed us to face death with courage and with hope. All right, so Jacob blesses Pharaoh rather than vice versa. Jacob, rather than Pharaoh, is master of the situation. Again, we see God in control here. All right, now, there's the epilogue. How am I doing? It's 8:30. Let's just look really briefly in the epilogue. Let's go to Genesis 49, 8 through 11. We don't have time to go through all of Genesis 49. So basically, in Genesis 49, Jacob prophetically blesses his 11 sons. All right? But let's look at the blessing to Judah in Genesis 49, verses 8 through 11. Judah, your brothers will praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons will bow down to you. You are a lion's cub, Judah. You return from the prey, my son. Like a lion, he crouches and lies down. Like a lioness who dares to rouse him. The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff between his feet, until he to whom it belongs shall come. And who's that? Jesus. In the obedience of the nations shall be his. He will tether his donkey to a vine. You recognize that prophecy there? His colt to the choicest branch. He will wash his garments in wine, his robes in the blood of grapes. His eyes will be darker than wine, his teeth whiter than milk. So again, we see God prophesying the Messiah. All right? There's a couple other things. What a great ending to Genesis, I would say. Joseph, the prefigure of the Messiah, dies. He leaves, when he dies, though, he leaves on the promise that he wants his bones to be brought back into the promised land. And 440 years later, Joseph's bones are finally returned, and he's buried in the cave of Machpelah, the same cave where Abraham, Isaac, Joseph, Sarah, Rebecca, and Rachel are buried. Sort of cool. All right, so that's the end of our lesson on Genesis. Any kind of thoughts or comments for the big group?
It's awesome to know that God is in control.
Yeah, even when it doesn't look that way, huh? Do you think Joseph was ever tempted to curse God?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.